Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel, and I asked him his name. It's a financial company, and I realize this angel's here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans, and it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Are you familiar with Rad? This is Wretched Radio, not Rad, dude.
That's a
like
great
you're a surfer from
movie.
Hawaii. Rad was an 80s movie?
Yeah, it was about BMX biking. It had the great Ray Walston and a very young Lori Loughlin before, you know, recent scandals hit.
Was that?
Before she had a daughter to buy into college.
Yes.
Where Keanu Reeves had to be involved somehow. Was he at least the producer?
No,
he had to be in there.
No, he wasn't around yet, but the prototype he was working off of definitely was. There was
Can't
a school dance with
how much
BMX
I love
bikes.
All righty, so that's Rad. That's not what we're talking about here. Going to do a little bit of a flashback. The other day, I'm sitting cross-legged on the floor, reading through a bunch of stuff. Old boxes of things I had to go through. Oh, what's in here? It's like presents. It's like when you move and get to the other side. Ooh, what did I put in this box that has a bunch of broken stuff now? And I was reading through an article from 2-3 years ago that we shared a fair amount of here on Wretched Radio, but I think is worth revisiting because I continue to hear from people who watched our Rad video. What am I talking about, dude? Talking about reactive attachment disorder. This is the malady that plagues so many adopted kids and fostered kids. It's basically post-traumatic stress. It's not a disorder, but we'll work with the terminology. It's PTSD for kids. They were traumatized somehow, and it wires their brain wrongly. And Christian families have brought those kids into their home more than any other demographic. Maybe because they heard another one of those sermons that was like, hey, if you really want to be a good Christian, you got to adopt. Or it's adoption month and we Christians, we adopt. No warnings, no danger signs. No, maybe not everybody is fit to adopt a child. There are scenarios not everybody should be adopting. Sorry for saying it that bluntly, but it's just the bottom line. There are some people who shouldn't. Because there are some people who can't handle the rad, and it destroys families. Reactive attachment disorder is a very, very under-the-radar issue in the Christian church, which is the number one place where these kids tend to live. And here's what you're going to hear in this story. I'm going to leave her name out of it because I don't know how the family is doing at this point. She blogged about it courageously, and you're going to get a sense of what this is like from hearing about this. Our first meeting with the three children was 2 days prior to their placement with us. They had no opportunity to observe the kids and to understand where they were at, especially when you're inviting kids to come into your home with other kids. When we arrived, Jason, not his real name, was sitting in a high chair with a sea of food surrounding him on the floor. Now you're saying, that's no big deal. That's what she thought. I've got four boys, so I'm used to messes, but this was like nothing I'd ever seen. Still, I didn't think much of it. He was jumping around, flailing his arms, and seemed to be a bit rambunctious. What I wouldn't realize until much later was that he was completely out of control, and this chair was there only to contain him. Oh. I went to pick him up from the chair, and he immediately clung to me as if he'd known me all his life. That's a reactive attachment disorder sign. They indiscriminately cling as long as they think you're a stranger. Once this woman sticks around and the child realizes, oh, you mean you're going to try to love on me and I have to submit to you? Danger, Will Robinson. I was encouraged. I thought he saw something within me that he liked. This, too, was a red flag that my excitement over the whole day and my ignorance of attachment disorders kept me from recognizing what was really going on. My husband asked where the restroom was. The foster mom showed him. As he got up to go, he closed the door behind him. Jason went to the door immediately and began crying uncontrollably, banging on the door. We felt compassion. We consoled him. We never considered for a moment that this was a red flag. Now, you're saying, well, this doesn't seem like a big deal. Oh, hang in there. They bring him into the home. There's food missing. Things were mysteriously broken. Children began crying for no reason. Remember, they've got four boys. And they brought in three kids with RAD. Jason was not able to recognize how to stop a task once it was finished. If asked to walk from the kitchen to the front door, he would keep walking straight into the door and continue banging himself into the door like a toy robot would do until I physically went over and stopped him. If he were to hold on the grocery cart while we were in the store, he would not let go and come to the car. Even after I returned the cart to the cart holder, he would stay attached to the cart until I would physically remove him. Once he had blood drawn at one of the required doctor visits, and the nurse drew the blood from the vein in his arm. He just stared at it, watching the needle go in and out, not even flinching, not even shedding a tear. They seem impervious to pain. It's not uncommon. A child with RAD will literally walk on broken glass, have bloody feet all over, and won't even cry, even as you pull the glass out of their foot. That's RAD. And you've got families like this in your church. You say, well, this sounds like some unique challenges, but that's not much. Hold on. It keeps going. They also had twins in this mix. They were a little bit easier to handle early on because they were babies, but their crying was just as the mom had said, inconsolable. Nothing brought them comfort. Crying randomly, no reason at all. Crying is an inadequate word for what they did, was scream as if they were being tortured for no reason at all. This was exhausting. You can imagine, can't you? Those should have been signs, but they just were not told. And that is why I believe that the evangelical church is doing a disservice by not being aware of these things and encouraging people to adopt kids indiscriminately. No, I'm not saying don't adopt, but what I am saying is we need full disclosure here. Let's continue with the story. Let's go back to Jason. He was spiraling out of control. He would do small passive-aggressive things that nobody would notice, but deliberate and pointed, mainly at me. That's typical. They go after mom because mom, female, is the one who hurt them primarily. I was his main nurturer. He was determined not to be nurtured. He became more passive-aggressive toward me since he was not able to go to the other rooms by himself because he couldn't be trusted alone. He had to ask me to use the bathroom when he needed to go. He was so against my authority that he would wait an entire day and then ask my husband if he could go to the restroom as soon as he walked in the front door. Now, I recognize you're maybe thinking, well, yeah, I guess that's a little weird. But it's a thousand things like this that happen in a given day to these folks. A year after they were placed in our home, we were able to finalize the adoption. I tried having the joy that was supposed to accompany this big day, but my heart was troubled. I wanted to believe this was the right thing, but I was exhausted. Why wasn't I feeling what I should? We moved to the country, thinking all the children needed was some open land to run and play and enjoy. They're not the only adoptive parent to do that. Well, okay, they get in trouble everywhere they go. They're trouble in school. They're trouble in the neighborhood. They're hurting kids on the playground. Let's go to the country. That'll help. These people were dedicated. These people were not bad parents. Perhaps being away from all the stimulation the city offers would channel their excess energy. That hope was quickly squelched. Jason began to steal food almost daily, despite being fed three meals and a snack each and every day. He stole little things constantly, or a whole pan of brownies would disappear while I stepped outside to check on the horses. Lying became the norm for him. He didn't respond in the least to any type of correction. One of the little twins began to display much of the same character traits as older brother. She would manipulate, use affection to get what she wanted. A lot of times the girls demonstrate a sexuality at a very young age. It's to manipulate because it works. The other child didn't have the same mental capacity as the others. He didn't manipulate, but he did not understand even the most basic instructions. Didn't understand what a stranger is. He didn't understand consequences. He pulled dressers on top of himself, jumped from the top step of a bus, assuming someone would catch him. Each of the children had issues with using the bathroom. They would urinate anywhere, on walls, floors, in garbage cans. Now is she getting your attention? They would hide their feces in clothing bins, wipe it on the furniture, the walls, etc. They did not wet the bed. They peed in it deliberately. When the three would play together, they would literally destroy a room, turning tables over, chairs over, throwing sofa cushions, and breaking or damaging property. Now, you're maybe getting a sense of what this couple dealt with. And this, to varying degrees, is what people who adopt are almost certainly going through. Are there exceptions? Yes. But a lot of times when I hear from people who will even say to me about sharing this story, hey, I know somebody who's adopted, or we've adopted and nothing's happened, typically tends to be a kid who's 6, 8, but they haven't gone through puberty yet. That's when the real fun begins, as you will hear next on Wretched Radio. And now, another great story from Cindy Marty of the Tomorrow Club.
A mother of a Tomorrow Club's child who's a university teacher, she just got saved because her daughter was going to the Tomorrow Club. Now she's bringing the gospel into her university.
Over and over and over again, we hear those stories and we never grow tired of them. Eastern Europe is being impacted by the Tomorrow Club's kids meeting clubs. The kids come, they learn about Jesus, they sing songs, they pray prayers, they get some snacks, and they get loved on, they get saved, they bring the gospel home to mom and dad, they get saved, then they bring the gospel. It's like the shampoo commercial, and so on and so on and so on. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? It's $30 a month for 30 little disciples. It's having a massive impact in Eastern Europe. You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Thank you for joining us today. We are always glad that you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. Could you, would you, might you help out with our prison initiative, an effort to get the gospel to those inside? 30% of the incarcerated are millennials. Within 3 years of release, about two-thirds of prisoners are rearrested. Within 5 years, it's about three-quarters of released prisoners are rearrested. Those are not encouraging numbers. So our thought is to reach those in prison with Don't Stub Your Toe and Jesus Unmasked, along with its study guide. If you'd like to help, we got two options for you. If you're involved in a prison ministry, terrific. Would you please get in touch with Al? And not surprisingly, it's easy to do. Just email al@wretched.org. al@wretched.org if you are involved in a prison ministry. Or if you're able to help out by becoming a gospel partner, the folks making this possible, wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Guess which year in our modern era has been the most violent year for Christians worldwide. If you said 2018, congratulations, you're correct. And persecution is not abating this year. Christians are being persecuted in more countries than any other religious groups. Millions of believers suffering, labor camps, imprisonment. They're facing physical violence. They're denied basic services like, you know, water, electricity, schooling, employment. Perhaps the least we could do for these dear brothers and sisters is to provide a Bible for them. Millions of persecuted Christians don't have the Word of God. Bible League International wants to change that with your help. $5 a Bible. How many could you send to our persecuted brothers and sisters overseas at wretched.org/Bible?
Books of the Bible. Exodus is a story of God saving his people from oppression and giving them an identity and an inheritance. God gives Moses the Ten Commandments, which begin with the statement, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Good deeds have always been a response to God's saving work, not a means of earning salvation.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The church needs to know. This is Wretched Radio. Stumbled across a story from a number of years ago of a couple with four boys deciding to adopt three kids, bringing a firestorm into their home. And the church, which regularly encourages people to adopt, needs to know about this so they can warn them, make sure they are prepared for it, and commit to helping. This is my bottom line. If a church is not willing to say to any couple who adopts, we are going to be here for you until the day you die, helping you with these kids, then that church shouldn't be preaching adoption. It takes a church to adopt a kid. And you're hearing that in a story. I'm keeping her name out of it. I hope these folks are doing well and they've hopefully recovered. Sharing the story about bringing these three kids in. And one of the issues that is so prevalent in this, she shares, of spending hours on the phone every day trying to figure things out. Where should I turn? They would go to friends and friends would think they were bad parents. They would go to the church and the church would think, uh-oh, do they need discipline for being such terrible parents? Very little is written about this. Very few studies have been done. And this couple, confused, why are the kids defecating on the walls and writing their name in their own bodily functions? That's what they're dealing with here. The story continues. I remember this, actually. The dad was sick one day, and so mom takes the seven kids. Remember, four biological, three RAD kids. And the kids were squiggling and wiggling, and she couldn't keep them under control. Then after the service, I was approached by a new family. The lady in the group began to give me all the advice she felt necessary for me to parent the children, because clearly I was doing something wrong. So here's this poor woman with three kids who are not controllable, doing her best in church. Somebody who was visiting gives her a lecture on parenting. Oofta. I graciously received her rebukes and thought nothing about it, as people often gave me unsolicited advice, not knowing anything about our situation. This gets shockingly worse. The following Friday, my husband came home at noon and said we needed to talk. Someone had gone to our elders at church complaining about my behavior on Sunday. They said they observed me with the children and went and spoke with a person they knew in the field of psychology. You got the connection here? I saw them do one thing in the parking lot, so I went to a psychologist. The psychologist told me what was going on from my little observation in the parking lot, called up the pastor to complain about the parents. Lovely. These children were clearly being abused, was the accusation. Now, this person who has never laid eyes on me or my children, who heard an account, oh, so it's even secondhand, it wasn't even seen in the parking lot, oh, man, Zilla, who heard an account of what transpired from a person visiting my church. So the woman, oh, man, the woman visiting the church who saw her in the pews tells a friend who calls a psychologist who then calls the pastor to say, you got child abuse going on. What? I had given everything I had to serve these children. I had endured every possible affront, assault, short of physical violence at the hands of these kids. I had given my time, money, energy, and resources. And this unknown, unseen person had the audacity to make this claim. And that was just the beginning. Part two of the story. Oh, how this affects families. This is a consideration. If you're thinking about adopting, that you simply need to be aware of. If you've already got kids in the house, they will be affected, period. Period. They will be affected. They will not go untainted from this. You need to know that. My biological boys were able to follow basic instructions, especially in public. Not perfect, of course, but they obeyed. The adoptees were very, very different. They would go with anyone who asked them, knock stuff off the shelves, stop and stare at something in a deep trance state, and never know we'd moved on. Ask an adoptive parents how many times they've said, come on, Justin. Justin, come on. Come on. Come on, ask them. I could not give them simple commands and have them follow, like stand over there, sit here, or go to the bathroom. I would be met with blank stares and worse acts of open defiance. They were always the reality wherever we were. When it was our turn to check out, my three oldest stayed at the cart and loaded them onto the belt. I told my bio 6-year-old, same age as the adopted son, Jason, not Justin, Jason, to go and stand at the other end of the checkout. I watched each adoptee separately at the end, taking them by the arm. If I held their hand to do this, they would only pull their hand away and stand there defiantly, not moving or obeying, daring me to say something in front of the crowd, and made sure they were standing in a safe place near me where I could see them. She grabs them by the arm to move them along. As my items were being passed under the scanner, an unknown woman approached me from behind, bent around me until her face was in mine, and asked me with an indignant tone if I were a foster parent. I said not anymore and continued to check out. The lady, a total stranger, followed me and my children to our van, shouting at me that she didn't like the way I, quote, handled those children. She proceeded to tell me she had written down our license plate number and was going to call the appropriate authorities to report my atrocious behavior. Now, you say that's just strangers. Oh, no. As you will soon hear, that happens inside of the church. Already did. As I read further on attachment, it became clear to me we had done everything wrong to encourage bonding from the beginning, not intentionally, but out of ignorance. It is important that adopted children learn to seek their comfort and solace with the new family only. Some adoption agencies recommend the new family rarely put their adopted child down, always holding them, never letting anyone else hold the child. So to get relief, they would have other people hold them, but then the child just indiscriminately bonds, doesn't bond correctly. Everything is flipped upside down for these people. My husband sent out an email to our church body, explaining briefly the difficulties the children were having bonding, though they'd been with us for 2 years now. And now we were fairly educated on reactive attachment disorder. We wanted to do all we could to give the children their best opportunity for success. So we asked all the families to please not pick up our adopted children, even when the kids asked. And they always asked, even when instructed otherwise. That request met with outrage. In fact, one of the ladies was so upset that she accused me of sinning because I was denying her the right to show my children brotherly affection. Wow. Very few respected our wishes. And thus came the beginning of the end. I was becoming increasingly tired of living in survival mode. I could never fully rest because even in the middle of the night, things were being destroyed, stolen, urine saturated. Every noise I heard had to be investigated. Kids had to be kept in separate rooms when I was not in a room with them to keep them from destroying stuff. Jason was banned from the kitchen and pantries for his constant stealing, so he began to send the twins to do his bidding. So we had to keep them all separated. We became prisoners in our own home. I began to speak with doctor after doctor, social workers, caseworkers, to no avail. About 6 months after the no-holding email, I received a text from my best friend's husband. They wanted to meet with us to discuss some things. They came to our home the next evening. My friend, my confidant, came for a visit. We were expecting, we want to support you. I was met with 2 full pages, front and back, of complaints against me. Anything and everything I'd ever done, said, or appeared to have done was brought up and criticized. It was my fault the children were having trouble because I refused to hold them when feeding. Instead, I put them in swings and had the boys do it. Never mind what it was, I was to blame. I apparently had exaggerated Jason's stealing. After all, kids take a marshmallow from the pantry now and again. Pay no mind that a few weeks before this meeting, Jason again snuck into the kitchen when I went outside, ate an entire flat of raspberries, and swallowed grapes whole. How do I know they were ingested whole? Because before I came back inside, he vomited everything up because he had eaten so fast. And the grapes were on the floor. He said he had done nothing. She listed crime after crime, and I sat there taking hit straight to the face. Every hit straight to the face. It became glaringly obvious that these people were not our friends. They were not there to help us, but to shame and condemn us. They cautioned us to comply with their demands or they would take further action. They left 3 hours later. This meeting only further served to deepen the chasm that had begun to grow between the adoptees and our family and our family and our church. Do you have adopted kids in your church? Do you walk alongside those parents? Do you help those parents? Do you support those parents? Do you pray for those parents? Or do you criticize those parents behind their back or to their face? Perhaps you have now walked a mile in somebody's shoes who has adopted children. Perhaps that will help us as a church to do better. This is Wretched Radio.
Know your church fathers. Ambrose was the Bishop of Milan in the 4th century and one of the four original doctors of the church. He defeated Arianism by appealing to scripture and using well-reasoned arguments. Ambrose reminds us that a faithful teacher is a blessing to generations of Christians. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Three words, reactive attachment disorder. This is Wretched Radio. This story that you are hearing is true. Names have been changed or not shared to protect the innocent and the kids. Christians are the number one adopting demographic. Christians are the one who sense, I need to do for this child what has been done for me. I want to do a physical act of the spiritual reality of my adoption into the family of God. And yet, so many of these families, if not all of them, blindsided by reactive attachment disorder. You're hearing a very brave woman. This happens very rarely, although you can go to the internet if you want to. Use the YouTube machine for reactive attachment disorder. You'll see our video there, and you'll see some stories, and you can read some stories. Do you remember the story a number of years ago? We haven't heard this for a while. The woman, maybe the dad too, sent the child back to Russia, one-way plane ticket, no accompaniment, just on the plane, sent him back, and you went, reactive attachment disorder. Let's continue our story. They have now had the kids for 2.5 years, getting criticized in public, getting criticized by the church. And now we start to understand the effect on the biological kids. They were even-tempered, well-mannered kids, quiet by nature, polite and respectful, but increasingly they became easily irritated, would raise their voices at each other, and didn't want to be at home the majority of the time. Their tempers became increasingly volatile. Or they would just withdraw in silence. I once went into our family closet, turned on the light, walked toward the back. There, curled up in a ball on the floor and weeping, was my 11-year-old son. I knelt down beside him, affectionately wiped his tears off his face, asked him what was the matter. He looked at me with tears streaming down his weary face and asked, "Why won't they listen, Mom? Why can't they obey?" Utterly defeated. Our time spent working on schoolwork, because they're a homeschool family, was a joke. Constantly having to stop or correct or admonish one of the adoptees, so they send him to public school. The reports come in, the kids are awful. Jason's behavior became increasingly aggressive, hitting other children, and the notes home increased. The behavior continued at home too, including ripping the dog's fur off their backs and stomping on our chickens' heads in their coop. One of the young twins thrived in her new environment, mainly because she was now always the center of attention. And that's what she wanted. It was like a narcotic for her. They are black holes of affection. If I were speaking to someone else, she would get louder and louder until all were looking at her. She would even take to hitting those I was speaking to in an effort to steal their attention away from me. Note, she wasn't seeking my attention, but the attention others were giving me. Now, maybe when you first started hearing this story, you thought, well, you can cope with that. Yeah, that's probably right. Maybe they can cope with that, too. And that. And maybe they could cope that at some point, hit after hit, knock after knock, persistent rebellion after every second of every day, it exhausts these families. Once, while at a park with my friends, while the older boys slid down the slides, my friend and I were keeping a close eye on the three. The little girl didn't want to come in the water, but we finally convinced her to try. She was not actually afraid of the water. This was just a clever way to garner the attention of those around her. As we walked beside her in the 18-inch deep water, her foot slipped and she went forward, face first, into the water. When Michelle's face hit the water, she just lay there floating. She didn't try to stand. She didn't kick and flail. She just lay there, floating, face down in the water. And it wasn't until my friend and I both grabbed her arms and brought her up that she stood. This was not a strange reaction to me because I've grown used to the uncommon, but my friend could not get over the fact that she didn't move, didn't try to get up, nothing. It's the odd world of reactive attachment disorder. At home, our boys were beginning to relax, at least for a few hours when the others were gone to public school. We wanted to be a family. We missed each other and we missed peace. We wanted to bond and attach to the adopted children, but it seemed everything was against us. We had no support. This is my point. No friends, no professionals to listen and help, and no church. We enjoyed peace while they were at school. This was not the way we wanted it to be, but we were powerless to change it. Something had to give, or something was going to break. We were all near the boiling point, and soon everything was about to come crashing down. Do you have an adoptive family in your church? Welcome to this world. Children with trauma issues can be very challenging when it comes to affection. Jason rejected any and all types of affection. It was a threat to him. Remember, if he accepts the affection of that mom, she can hurt him again like he was hurt by his bio mom or by the women in foster care or by the women in the orphanage. Anytime you would try to reach out for any type of loving touch, a hug, hand-holding, anything, he would stiffen every muscle in his body. It didn't bring him comfort or security. It brought him fear and flight mode. Conversely, as long as things are chaotic, he was at peace. What's up is down. What's black is a tennis shoe. Everything is flip-flopped. With the little girl, she used affection as a tool. It was her weapon of choice to gain control. It was indiscriminate. She would show the same affection for us as a total stranger. This was a great inhibitor to our bonding with the children and they with us. We tried earnestly to navigate this, give them what they needed in the way they needed it. But few outside our home understood the great delicacy this required. So they ridiculed and reprimanded us because we didn't love the children as they thought we should. All the while, we struggled to connect with the kids while being criticized for the way we were doing it. Wow. Let's go back to their church friends. Five people from church wanted to meet with them. So they sat down, and it went much like the other encounters they'd had with people from church. There were accusations and criticisms and plain old name-calling. At one point, one of the men stood up and yelled at me in my own home, and nobody batted an eye, as if I deserved it. I was told how horrible I was for sending the adoptees to public school, how this clearly showed I cared nothing for them. Wow. We were under a fierce attack. We were told we didn't hug our children enough, that we treated them intentionally different from our bio kids. Yeah, they did, because they're different, that's all. They all agreed they were going to begin officially monitoring our parenting as we would all meet back together to discuss our progress or lack thereof in 6 months. Stunned, I asked, so let me get this straight. You're all going to be watching our every move, how many hugs I give, how many times I smile, I'm treating each child the same. And we're going to meet in 6 months, and you're going to tell me if I passed or failed your arbitrary standards. Is this correct? And one of the men answered, yes. Can you just add a little insult to injury? At home, we had been beaten, wearied, and defeated. We had tried so hard every day to do the right thing, some days better than others, but we were losing. And now we were being told by our church that if we did not comply with their demands, they were going to take some unknown, unspoken consequences. Once this meeting concluded, we decided for the protection of our family, we had to leave this church. Isn't that great? Wow. No longer a safe or healthy environment for our family. We didn't know who we could trust. That was the most agonizing decision. Our kids had every friend they'd ever known there. During all of this, we were still dealing with extreme behaviors. Jason began telling me regularly he no longer wanted to live in our home. He was sick of being in timeout and wanted to go live where he could do whatever he wanted. While in timeout, he would regularly eat the crown molding, rip sheetrock from the walls, or urinate in the corner. Are we all having fun yet? We desperately wanted attachment. We'd have given everything. We tried formulating all kinds of plans, calling every agency. Nothing, including the church. With every option exhausted, no hope in sight, and the looming fear of what others may be plotting against us, through much prayer and discussion, we finally came to what we believed was our only choice. The adoption had to be dissolved. And they did. That was 2 years ago. Some morals to this story from this family. Believe them. Just believe them. There are very, very few people, especially inside the church, if any, that adopt kids so that they can treat them poorly. Believe them. Listen to them. Don't help them with certain things. Help the parents, but when kids are traumatized, picking them up, having conversations, that type of, just don't do that. Help the parents. Don't ignore the bio kids. Educate yourself in trauma and attachment. Ask them. Ask an adoptive parent, what's going on? It won't be offensive, she writes. It'll show the parents that you get it. Some children have food that will trigger their episodes, so offer to bring a meal based on the limitations they have to place on food. And please, never offer an adoptive child food. Always ask the parents first, out of earshot of the child. And don't be offended if they say no. Food is a major issue in many trauma children, and it has to be treated with the utmost caution. More advice. If you know or see an adoptive parent in public, encourage them. No lectures. Encourage them. Number 8. Educate your church. That is what we are intending to do with this story. Number 9. Understand that all parenting is not created equal. What works in your home does not work in another home with different kids. And finally, pray for them. This is Wretched Radio.
The main character of missions is the theologian preacher who goes out and proclaims the word of God. And I would suggest to you that the great majority of missionaries on the field do not fit this description.
The Masters Academy International, they're working tirelessly to change that. We have pastors all over the globe, but in so many countries, they have no means to get educated. The Masters Academy International trains indigenous pastors to become theologians, scholars, and right expositors of the word. Think of the impact of a pastor preaching rightly to his congregation, who then goes out and shares the good news that they've heard preached rightly. Small investment, massive impact. Could you support a pastor to be trained as a theologian? Wretched.org/pastor.
If you cannot get enough of Wretched Radio, never fear. Wretched TV is here. Wretched has filmed over 2,400 30-minute TV programs with subjects that range from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics. You'll find segments on evangelism, discernment, and a whole lot more. Not only will you find all Wretched TV episodes there, you can also watch programs that we've hand-selected for you based on topic in something we've cleverly called the library. At Wretched.org, you're able to watch the most amazing Christian television program ever recorded. And you will also behold the single most handsome Christian TV host ever. All right, Joey, who wrote this?
That would be Todd.
Of course he did. Be that whatever it was, if you still want to watch good Christian TV with the most handsome host of all, well, just visit Wretched.org. Wretched.org.
Please listen very carefully to these 14 words spoken by a man who it is evident is suffering still from the effects of participating in the abortion of his own child.
I'm the father of 5, but only got to raise 3 of them.
Do you hear the regret? Daddies are victims. Mommies are victims, and most certainly babies are victims. The war for life, it is heating up in this country, and while our government seems bent on taking the lives of innocent human beings up until the moment they are to be born, and now, even after they are born, there's something that we can do to stop this heartache and travesty of justice. Please support preborn.org/wretched. Providing ultrasounds saves lives, saves heartache. $28 per ultrasound. Please engage in the war for life. preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Deuteronomy means second law. As the Israelites prepared to enter the Promised Land after wandering 40 years, God reminds them of how he rescued them from Egypt, what he commands in his law, and the blessings and curses that come with keeping or breaking his law. God is faithful to provide the inheritance he has promised to his children. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Personalize, sympathize, destigmatize, then terrorize. This is Wretched Radio, the second video produced from TED Talks. You know, the pseudo-intellectual lectures that are given to really groovy progressive people, challenging our old foundational principles, looking at life from a new, on the right side of history angle. This is the second presentation on pedophilia. What's the matter with that, Friel? So they're talking about pedophilia. No, they're not talking about it. They're promoting it. They are trying to make it normative. You're about to hear the devil. I'm sorry, that's not her name. Sorry, it's Madeleine Vanderbruggen. Sounds an awful lot like awfully dark thinking. She's a psychiatrist. She's also a criminologist. She's from the Netherlands, Dutchland, if I'm not mistaken, and she works with the police to deal with pedophiles. And so what you're about to hear is a woman trying to look like she's opposed to pedophilia, but for it at the same time. How does she do that? She distinguishes between imposed pedophilia, you know, forcing yourself on somebody, versus the good type of pedophilia. If you get consent from a five-year-old, then love is love. That is how she seeks to not look like a monster. Although, frankly, if you can't say what you're about to hear is indeed demonic, I don't know what is. So she looks like, hey, I don't want little kids getting hurt, but hey, let's not be so taboo-y about pedophilia. And you're going to hear the classic, have we not seen this play run before? The classic way that liberals go about changing culture, morals, and values. Step number one, we need to personalize the issue. Do you know somebody who has a sexual proclivity? Imagine how horrible that would be. And there are so many of them. There are 30% of the population, so we were told, is homosexual. How can we deny so many people their right to be intimate with others?
International research repeatedly portrays that 0.5 up to even 3% of our male population has some form of pedophilic interest.
3%! That's so many people who have to live in the closet. How could we be so barbaric to keep them from expressing themselves? What's the first step in changing a worldview? Personalize it.
Most probably, there will be someone in your environment, someone you know, someone like your neighbor, like your colleague, like your football mate, maybe even your husband or son, who is struggling with these sort of feelings. The only thing is, you don't know about it.
You don't know about it, but how could you talk about pedophilia in such a way when your son might be feeling so bad that you're such a Neanderthal thinking that it's wrong for an adult to impose him or herself onto a child? How do you get people on your side? You have got to personalize it so that they start to sympathize with these people.
Because even though these percentages are massive, most of these people know that they have feelings that they should repress. So most of these people don't act out on it. They don't offend.
Oh, no.
Which is great, isn't it?
Oh, no, but...
But the problem is, these people can't talk about their feelings because they know that they will be hated for it.
Oh. First of all, little straw man hated. Who hates a pedophile? Nobody's hating people. But this behavior that she is trying to bring into the sunlight so that they can live appropriately is redefining ethics and values and morals, and she is doing it with the classic sympathetic approach. These poor, poor people.
I truly do believe that every person is longing for love at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And what if this love that you really wish for will forever be impossible? That must be a really lonely situation to be in.
These poor, poor people. They must be so lonely. What is she driving at? She's going to tell you the criminal pedophilia, when it's not with somebody's approval, that is bad. But when it's with approval, then it's just fine. Now she's also going to bring in, biology. You know, born that way. It's scientific. Listen for a key phrase, because this is where the whole battle will be won or lost, where children will either be abused or protected. Two words, sexual orientation. If pedophilia becomes just another sexual orientation, according to the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, then it's just love is love. They're just expressing themselves. After all, it's just their sexual orientation. And how can we keep these people, so many of them, from love?
From an emotional point of view, I can kind of understand that you would want to eliminate these people from society.
Okay, stop. What do you mean eliminate them? We're just going to walk around and start mowing people down? Nice hyperbole.
However, it doesn't make sense.
Oh.
And that's because we're talking about biology.
Ah.
We're talking about a sexual orientation, something that we simply cannot change. And on top of that, every day, new people are born with the same difficulty.
There it is. It's just a sexual orientation. If that catches on, if that is legalized in the DSM, which is the way this works, as soon as the psychologists say, yeah, it's just a, you know, it's a sexual orientation, you're off to the races. If this takes hold, it's game over. Bestiality, the whole shebang. We are not at the bottom of the barrel, but we're getting awfully close, aren't we? We're at the dregs now, aren't we? This is Madeleine van der Bruggen giving a TED talk on pedophilia, trying to make us feel bad for how we view pedophiles.
What we think about when we hear about sex offenders is what we see portrayed in the media. And the media usually reports about the most extreme cases, the real violent offenders.
Yeah.
Those people that are portrayed as monsters and less than human.
Yeah, and they're not all that way, you know. They're not all monsters. Okay, good. They don't act on it. That's nice. When you get angry, hopefully you don't murder somebody. You don't act, but that doesn't mean that murder is suddenly a good thing and an acceptable thing. Just change the sin for another sin, and it becomes ridiculously obvious that her argument is totally fallacious. Rape. Let's use rape. Madam, look, the only thing that you people see on the news are just the extreme cases of rape. Do you know how many people have rape inclinations? Maybe you know somebody. How could you possibly cause them to suppress their desire to rape people? It's ridiculous, and it is an effort to normalize what should be obvious to everybody. Pedophilia is bad, but not when you personalize it.
And now I hear you think, yeah, but you know what? Whoever the offender and whatever seriousness the crime, they should still all be punished for it. Yes.
Guess what word is coming. You're going to say, but But however, she's clever enough to at least change it for another similar conjunction.
But what if this time the offender is your neighbor, your colleague, your football mate? What if this time the offender is your husband or son? What if this time the police shows up at your doorstep?
Yeah, aren't you going to be sorry that you're opposed to pedophilia then? When your child, who's committed a criminal act, violating a young child sexually, aren't you going to feel terrible about that? Madeline Vanderbruggen trying to get us to sympathize by personalizing the argument. Step three, you got to destigmatize it.
We tend to think in stigmas. We tend to think that people who would do this, they're either really pathetic, lonely men spending 24/7 on the internet waiting for children they can groom. Or they must be really psychopathic men, really violent, with no conscience whatsoever. I can tell you from experience, this stigma is simply not correct.
Change the stigma. Destigmatize it then. You have got to demonize people. You've got to terrorize people. Who? That's right, hater. You, Christian.
So how can we be open about a problem now? How can we break the taboo? Well, first of all, let's stop with hate. Let's stop with negative vibes in the media, and let's stop with throwing rocks at offenders' houses.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to take us anywhere. It's never going to solve this problem.
Personalize, sympathize, destigmatize, and then terrorize those of us who at least still have an ounce of common sense and care about the well-being of children. Start calling us haters, apparently pedophobes. That is how the world changes its culture. Until next time, go serve your king.